And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 12th of November 2024, and a frosty start for some of us across the northwest of Ireland. This morning, and some low mist which is already beginning to burn off as the sun is out. So hopefully it's going to be a nice, dry and fresh day. We're going to keep you informed and entertained here in the 9 till noon show, I hope, for the next 3 hours and throughout the day here on your number one local radio station, Highland Radio. Lots coming up. We've got Community Garda information after 10, and then after 11, it's our first live podcast, I suppose, where we have guests joining us to discuss the runners and riders, and I mean that with absolute respect, for the election which takes place on the 29th of November. Who potentially could be in? Who could be out? Are there any upsets? Where will votes go? We're going to be debating and discussing that, and maybe I can pin down my guests to a prediction as to who they believe the five successful candidates will be once counting is concluded on the 30th. Maybe even the 31st, but we shall see. So that's coming up after 11, and we're going to dig deep into the local elements of this and who is safe, who is not, and so on and so forth. And with respect to candidates, I do understand that no one wants to be described as safe and no seat is safe. We all know that. But it is the nature of elections whereby we debate and discuss and pick things, and we're either right or we're either wrong, and it's up to individual candidates, I suppose, to ensure they motivate their supporters to get out and to vote. Right, let's look at some of the newspapers this morning. And a man has been arrested on suspicion of Jojo Dollard's murder. He's been a suspect since 1995. And many people out there know this guy, know his name, know his background, and perhaps would be a little bit perplexed as to what's going on here. But anyway, a man arrested for questioning over the disappearance and murder of Josephine Jojo Dollard in 1995 has been a suspect in the case from the very early stages of the investigation. He's a member of a well-known family in the Kildare-Wicklow region. Gardaí took the strategic decision to detain him yesterday, just 2 days after a public appeal for information was made on the 29th anniversary of Miss Dollard's disappearance. Garda sources said it was hoped the man would have been put under pressure in recent days due to the publicity around the case as the anniversary fell. The arrested man, who's 55 now, is the first person to be detained in connection with Miss Dollard's disappearance and was being questioned on suspicion of murder. He had been spoken to previously and witness statements taken from him, although he was never arrested. Gardaí believe Miss Dollard was taken away from the roadside and killed, perhaps in an attack that was sexually motivated and opportunistic. The man arrested reportedly had a minor injury to his face in the days following the victim's disappearance. Detectives believe the arrested man was in the village of Moon, County Kildare, when Miss Dollard, just 21 at the time, phoned a friend from a call box on the night of November 9th. She was never heard from again. New evidence has been gathered and witness statements taken since the case was upgraded in 2020 from a missing persons inquiry to a murder investigation. And obviously there is new information because they wouldn't be able to arrest someone because it is a historic case to some extent. Most likely the person will be released pending a file to the DPP. So the family continues their anxious wait for some news and progression in relation to that. Obviously, we're in full election mode now, and we'll go to the Irish Independent for some overview there. The battle to lead the next coalition government has escalated, with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael taking aim at each other's election promises. Meanwhile, Sinn Féin's moving to woo middle ground voters with a pledge to introduce a massive $1.8 billion tax cut for workers. The rising political tensions came as parties held a series of launches in the capital yesterday, with the campaign entering its fourth day. Fianna Fáil launched its election manifesto in the heart of Dublin, with promises to increase the weekly state pension to £350 and a pledge to keep the age you can qualify for the payment at 66 years old. It's also included a radical plan to introduce a new Department of Domestic Affairs to take the lead in national security, migration and other key issues. The move would involve devolving powers from the Department of Justice. However, soon after the Fianna Fáil policy document was launched, Fine Gael issued a statement from Justice Minister Helen McEntee defending the election pledges announced by her coalition partner. Yesterday, Taoiseach Simon Harris was visiting Donegal. He's Visit was delayed because he held his first telephone call with US President-elect Donald Trump 40 minutes on the side of the road, I understand. Trump swept to victory, of course, last week over Democratic Kamala Harris following a divisive US election. The call comes as Mr. Harris is continuing his campaign in the general election as he bids to return to the Taoiseach's office. During the call, the Taoiseach congratulated Trump on his comprehensive victory in the US election. The two leaders also reflected on the strong and enduring ties between Ireland and the US and said they hoped to meet soon. So the usual kind of rhetoric there. What do you think of Fianna Fáil's plans to legalise cannabis? Well, they had to clarify the situation a little bit because their policy document was not really very clear. Fianna Fáil has denied suggestions it will legalise all drugs following pushback from Fine Gael over a manifesto promise. Taoiseach Micheál Martin's party launched its general election manifesto in the Smock Alley Theatre in Dublin yesterday. It was the first party to unveil its full policy document. In government, well, I won't go through that because I've already mentioned what it promised to do, but it also promised to decriminalise cannabis. Fianna Fáil had to vehemently deny the suggestion, though, that it planned to decriminalise all drugs. Fianna Fáil believes drug addiction should be dealt with in a humane and compassionate manner as a public health issue, a spokesperson said. So what do you think about that? Would you be in favour of seeing cannabis decriminalised? I'm not sure I'd be very interested in anything that might in some way make it more palatable for my boys to start taking something. I don't know. Maybe I'm just an old fart. I don't know. It's probably, maybe it's the right thing to do. But it just, if it comes off the table as something that's really illegal, you just wonder how many people might start taking it. But then there's lots of people take it and they think it's fine. So I don't know. The Green Party, they're hoping to use half of apple tax for transport. Not very good news for us here in the Northwest because there's nothing here in it for us. Leader Roderick O'Gorman will launch his party's general manifesto in Dublin City Centre today. They'd invest an additional $10 billion to supercharge delivery of major public transport projects, but they're all down the country. The Metrolink, Dart Plus, the Lewis extension and rail projects in Cork, Limerick, Galway and Waterford, trying to get them underway and overway. So, as I say, not a great deal in it for the Northwest, really, according to the papers today. Do you think much about your funeral and how you might pay for your funeral? I watch quite a few of the channels high up in Sky, and in Britain they seem obsessed by it, that you can pay for your funeral well in advance. Often it's cremation and it's no hassle and all that kind of stuff. I suppose it's people prepare for the inevitable, as sad as it may be. But here in this country, we're not so interested in planning for our future, our funeral. 8 out of 10 of us are going to leave it to someone else to worry about. More than 8 in 10 Irish people say they have not set aside funds or made arrangements for their funerals. A survey of people by insurance specialists Gallagher even found that 1 in 4 of that group said they have no plans to ever do so. More than half of the 1,000 adults asked say they believe the cost of a funeral would come in at under $5,000. So it's interesting, isn't it? 8 out of 10 of us have not costed our funeral. Is that you? I mean, maybe you've organised everything. And it's not, you know, necessarily a morbid subject for you. I'd love to hear from you. Maybe you've got the whole thing planned out. 086 60 25,000, share the details. Or maybe you don't want to think about it. Or maybe a little bit like me. I think it's someone else's problem, isn't it? I've done enough looking after people. They can sort all that out. Is that stupid and naive of me? I don't know. Many of you tune in to Match of the Day on the BBC because many of you follow Premiership football. But after a quarter of a century fronting Match of the Day, Gary Lineker is about to blow the final whistle on his role. The presenter will quit the show in summer and after hosting the 2026 World Cup, is to leave the BBC altogether. Bosses are expected to announce his departure later today and start the hunt for his successor. It'll be interesting to see. Probably will be a woman. Because that's the way things are now, to try and balance things up as the way they've been historically. I say it's not a lock-in, but it's probably likely. I don't know who the candidates for that might be. But they didn't want him. There's a new head of sport at the BBC, and I think Lineker was keen to re-sign, but they didn't offer him a new contract for Match of the Day. It comes after 6 weeks of contract negotiations ended with an agreement for 63-year-old Lineker to step down from the popular Saturday Night Football show. He probably enjoys it, but he gets £1.3 million a year. He's 63 years of age. I mean, at some point you do have to sort of say, right, I've made me money now. I'm going to enjoy it. But maybe that's going to football tournaments and matches and all that kind of stuff is what he enjoys. The temperature down, as we know, it was very mild for a while, and the thermostat's going to go up, isn't it? And do you argue with your other half about the thermostat? Maybe you prefer it about 21. Maybe he or she prefers it at 24. Maybe you've a tidy in the house and the thermostat's set at 17 or 18. Now, this all depends on how drafty your house is otherwise. But anyway, it has been relatively mild so far this autumn, but households appear to be already locked in a bitter battle over the thermostat. The way I do it is I ensure that it's so complicated that no one else can touch it. You know, I really think it'd be very difficult for most people to come in and adjust the thermostat. So I kind of have carte blanche over it. It's a dictatorship. But what's it like in your house? A poll found one in four regularly, you couples out there, regularly argue about the heating. 18% get frustrated with family members who tinker with the temperature. I can understand that. With rising energy costs, some 96% are often turning the heating down to save cash. One in five said they're also concerned about elderly relatives who may be more vulnerable to the cold, which is a major problem, of course. But and every year I wonder, because I don't have the luxury of living in a house that's airtight, right? It's drafty. So once the heating goes off, you can feel the heating go off and you can feel it getting cold. And you wonder, is it better to, you know, to boost the heating, to stick it on for 2 hours and then leave it off for 2 hours and stick it on? And some would say that you're better off leaving it on all the time at a steady temperature. And then that debate is as to what saves the most money. The only problem I have with that is to change a strategy, you could get it wrong and empty your oil tank. Do you know what I mean? So it's hard to risk it. But anyway, any rows in your house about the heating? What's your optimum temperature? How do you use it? Or also, if you want to talk to us about your funeral, why aren't you planning it? Maybe you've got everything planned out down to the music. Let me know. 086 60 25,000. And if you have anything you want to throw into the conversation about the election and who do you think, who's your top five? I'll tell you what we'll do, actually. Send us your who you, and not necessarily what you want, but who do you believe your five successful candidates would be? I'd really interested in that. And a lot of you out there, you know, we get experts on the show and they know their stuff, but the biggest experts are out there. You're out in the ground all over the county with different perspectives. I'd love to hear who the top five would be from someone in Dunloe versus who the top five might be from someone in Carndonagh or Drumkeen or Donegal Town. So text in who you believe the five TDs for Donegal will be after the 29th. 086 60 25,000. And not who you want. You can add that, who you want, but who you think. It'd be lovely to sort of get the hive mind going to see what's what. Good morning to Dolores Dunleavy, always watching with us. Great to have you on board, Dolores. Audrey's there as well. Hundreds of you watching across the various formats. You can watch the show live on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. So if you're at home, by the way, instead of watching this morning and them discussing some thing to do with Warwickshire or something, you can stick us on your smart TV. Just open the YouTube app, type in Highland Radio Ireland or your Fire Stick as well. And we're across Facebook and on the X platform. Good morning to Doreen Sheridan Kennedy, also watching as well. Hi, Doreen. I think Doreen celebrated a birthday recently, and I didn't get the opportunity to wish you a happy birthday. So if I'm correct in saying so, happy birthday to you right now. And we welcome onto the show now Jackie McBrearty. Good morning, Jackie. Thanks for your time today.
Morning, Greg.
I can't believe we're still having this conversation because I think I've had it with you once and others more than that. And this is about election literature being inclusive, really accessible for blind people. And is this an issue physically and online as well, Jackie?
Yeah, it's both. You would have on the online that you'd have someone saying, "We are going to make this change," blah blah blah, image. And what they have, their information is in the image, and my screen reader won't pick that up, or it'll pick it up and it'll be completely
gobbledygook.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, and listen, I'm sure there are candidates and others listening today. So if you've got a reader that you access, your X or your Facebook or whatever it might be, Jackie, and text is not an issue and you can interact with that and learn people's policies and all that type of stuff. But if they put a picture with the text embedded in the picture, the reader will try and make sense of it, but it's very, very difficult. Is that right?
Yeah, because no, there is a thing called alt text
yes.
that people can add, and the only people that will see it or read it is a screen reader user. It wouldn't affect a sighted person at all. They won't even know it's there. But a screen reader user will be able to read perfectly if they copy, if they put their stuff into the alt text and have a wee image up of them standing holding the baby, like, you know, but have it for us what's actually written in the image, like.
Okay, so do we do, so if I'm doing it, Jackie, if I post a poster, for an example, do I have to automatically add the alt text or does the social media company do that?
No, again, the social media would, but it's a guess. You know, if it's
you.
A photograph, it might say,
understood.
Contains a person with a dog and a shoe. And you're like, where's the shoe?
I understand.
It doesn't
right.
properly yeah. do it. Like,
and it's
yeah.
AI stripping a quick yeah. look at the image. All right, okay. So listen, that's for us all to note in terms of, and it's not just people who are blind. It can be people with various stages of vision loss, which it would be useful to. Now, onto the physical leaflets. This must feel terrible, Jackie, because they put these shiny pieces of paper through the door, and to someone with vision loss, they're completely useless. They're worse than junk.
Oh, God, they are. They are junk, basically. In fact, I taped up my letterbox, and they'll still probably drop them at the mat. They don't seem to understand. If you do approach them, they don't seem to understand what blind or vision impaired means, which is quite disturbing.
Right.
During the last election, I had a person at the door and I was going, well, I'm totally blind. What's this candidate's thing for people with disabilities? Oh, well, they're going to do this, but I'll give you a leaflet anyway so you can read it.
Oh, great. Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, but I can't see it.
Mm.
You know, so it's the fact of they don't listen to you saying, I am blind, can't see, nothing. Zero, and they don't get it. Like,
yeah, and I mean, like, it's actually just really your vote being respected, isn't it? As much, Jackie, as if that, you know,
yeah.
And not just yours, but other people with vision impairment or blindness. It's like that your vote doesn't matter because we're not really articulating this information in a way that you can consume it.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Do you think there should be, if people aren't prepared to make this change voluntary, Jackie, do you believe there should be a compulsion if people insist on printing this type of documentation that it is more accessible?
I definitely do. A lot of people would use screen reading software or magnification software. Like, everything I would do would be electronic. So if somebody would come and say, look, I can email you a plain text version of my leaflet, they have to have a plain text version somewhere, then I can read it. Offer another alternative like that for somebody to be able to access what their policies are. Mm. You know, I vote on a wing and a prayer. I vote because of I like the person, but I still don't know what their policies are.
I'll tell you, if it were me, I mean, you can get USB sticks for absolutely nothing now. You know, you could orate your policies. I'm not sure if that would suit you, Jackie, but do you know what I mean? There are different ways of doing it, or at least say, oh, I'm sorry, do you have an email address and I'll send on the audio file of the leaflet or something. If they can't articulate it there and then, I mean, there are such easy ways to do this, to be inclusive and to understand that everybody has varying abilities. And I'm going to have to mention to you as well, Jackie, and I'm sorry because I know, I forget the name of your lovely dog, but I know you'd be out and about with your dog, and there is that extra potential peril now of low-hanging election posters.
Yes. You know, if candidates are coming on your show and saying that their posters have been defaced, the first question I always think is, how high were they? Like, is vandals really walking around with a stepladder and going up 2.3 metres high and drawing a little moustache on their posters? Or is the posters at head level and the person's coming by and cutting them down or painting them or doing something. They are a complete and utter nightmare. And the other thing is when they get taken down, the cable ties.
Yeah.
I've approached the traffic light and a cable tie was pointing out the wind, went straight onto my eye.
Oh, no.
Now, a cable tie going into the eye hurts. A cable tie being pulled out is worse.
No, that's horrid. That's horrendous. That could catch anyone out. Jackie, yeah. That's terrible. So the minimum height for the base of the poster is 2.3 metres. I can think of at least a handful now already that are well below that.
Yeah.
Okay, and obviously your dog's not going to spot the poster really or acknowledge it as a danger to you, and your cane or someone who uses a cane won't pick that up either, so you're straight into it potentially. And the edges of those bloody things are sharp, not to mention the cable ties.
Yeah. I had an incident with I won't name the party, but I actually turned the poster around towards the wall. And so it wasn't going to be an obstacle for anybody.
Yeah, okay.
But it's just for the candidates, they think. If they want my vote, they're going to have to work for it. They have to support their constituents who are blind and visually impaired and see that we have the vote. We don't vote for them, they don't get on, sort of thing. Like,
yeah, of course. Well, take us then to polling day. As a blind person, Jackie, what are you presented with in terms of the ballot paper?
It's like something that a play school child could make. It's like a sheet of plastic with these kind of Velcro straps down them, and then that goes onto the ballot paper. Now, for a referendum, no bother. You've just got a yes and a no, and perfect. But if you've got an election where there's maybe 10, 12 candidates running, it's a hard plastic, and you know the size of the polling booths yourself. They're not that big. So this thing doesn't fit in it properly, and you don't know then. And you have to remember, you have to count down the candidates that you want to vote for. You have to count down the strips to say, okay, I want to vote for the person that's number five, but the one there. Count down again. And before it was more straightforward when they had no flaps on it. I don't know why they put the flaps
so
on.
So say, for instance, you wanted to vote for Charles Ward, and I'm only picking Charles out because his surname begins with a W, and I believe they're in there alphabetically. There's 20-odd candidates now at this stage, right? So if you want, as a blind person, if you wanted to vote for Charles Ward, what's the process?
I have to count down to where I think he is.
Right. So there's no actual indication. So you count down, say, how would you know he was candidate 20, for an example?
Well, coming up to election time, there will be a phone number that we can ring. Now, apparently we can also use our phones in the polling booth, which I can't understand because you can't take photographs or anything. So I'm standing there holding my phone, ringing a number, listening to candidates. Like, but there is a number to say, you know, number one is number two.
Right, so if you physically have to count one, two, three. You have to count down these patches to get to 20, and assuming they've been put on correctly, that's the only confirmation of who you voted for personally, really.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I just ignorance, Jackie, and these why these conversations. I would have thought there would have been some braille on particular ballot papers so that you could feel the person's name and mark beside it. You know, your left index finger identifying the person, and then the tick or the two or the five. Wow, that's and then how do you get it inside the box? Because you know when it comes to scrutinising spoiled votes or what have you, is there any guidelines to ensure that your five or your six or your one is contained within the box specifically, Jackie?
Well, the template goes over the box.
Okay,
so you definitely are.
Right, it keeps it within its boundaries. Okay.
You definitely are within the box for it, so that's that'd be one of the, you know, but it's also like, now I'm lucky. I, as I said, come 30 years ago, so I know how to write. I know my numbers. Yeah. I know how to do an X.
Yeah.
There's people out there who say we're blind from birth that weren't taught that, so they still can't vote secretly.
Yes.
Because they don't know how to do their numbers. They don't know how to do an X. They don't know how to do these things. So it's not fully accessible either for all blind and vision impaired people.
Well, there you go. Listen, again, Jackie, I think maybe what we need to do is have a conversation 3 years out from election rather than 3 weeks, because it's always the same. But I mean, in terms of, you know, accessibility and inclusion and just common sense, a lot of this stuff could be easily rectified if actually someone cared about the vote of the blind person. Really is what it feels a little bit like to me, Jackie. I'm sure you're the person most affected by it. But listen, it's been a fascinating insight. I really do appreciate your time.
Yeah, and also, like, if you do have candidates on that are whining about their posters being defaced, ask them how high they were.
Okay, yes.
I'd be very curious.
Just ruined all those phone calls. I'll not get them now, Jackie.
we hope they do, because I'm really looking forward to
I'm actually going on a poster watch now and see which ones are... Because 2.3 metres is 7-odd feet, I think. Maybe even a bit... Yeah. It's maybe more. Maybe it's 8 feet. Right, okay, interesting stuff. Thanks, Jackie.
You know, and I'm 4'9", so if I can walk into it, they're very low.
Well, I invite those with posters below 7 or 8 feet to go on out and have a look at them, because as you say quite rightly, your poster could only be defaced then if someone had a stepladder with them, and who's walking around with a stepladder? All right, Jackie, listen, thanks for your time.
Okay, perfect.
Take care of yourself. Okay. All right, that's Jackie there with her insight into that whole situation. An email in here from Rita. Yesterday there was a caller regarding being fined by EasyJet. I think the point is missed here. Read the size of the bag. Most people say that the bag fits in the overhead locker or under the seat, but the point is that the bag must fit in the sizer used by the airline. I was fined by Ryanair because of a bag that didn't fit into their measuring basket. I had taken the same bag lots of times and got away with it. On another occasion, my bag was measured and it only barely went in because I had it so packed. I think if the flight isn't full, the airlines try to make up the cost of bag charges if you're unlucky enough to be caught. And that's it, isn't it? It's the inconsistency that's bothering people. Right, okay. I do have to take a very quick break, and then we're back with a couple of guests in just a couple of moments. Okie doke, let's talk election posters. Vincent Traynor, good morning to you. How are you getting on?
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Good. I noticed, actually, and there's an irony to it, but I can understand where it's coming from. But someone has erected a poster and nailed it to a pole saying, "No election posters, please." Now, I'm not sure if they just don't want to look at politicians' faces or they're concerned for the environment, either or. But what's your view on posters?
I saw that sign too. I thought, I live in Malin, by the way, and we have no postering at all, and it seems to be fine. I was listening to your previous caller saying that posters are, even if they're put up at the right height, they're going to slip down. They're going to obstruct people, especially people with visual impairment, but and people pushing prams as well. They get in the way of road signs. They, you know, a lot of these road signs nowadays have got these little solar panels to charge them, like, you know, to light up, and they're obstructing those. The other thing is, like, I think it's just a war of escalation between the parties. I'd say that every party would be happy to have no posters if only the others would stop doing it. I mean, every party's doing it because everyone else is doing it. Do you know how much they cost? Because a few years ago, I found out that they were at least €10 each per poster.
That would be small more ones, now. I would say. That's the very small ones.
Oh, is there more then? Yeah. Right. And there's the cost of cable ties, and there's the cost of driving a van around the county, you know, and have you got volunteers, or are you paying people to put them up and take them down again? By the way, they're not biodegradable, even if they say they are. And I know, because I have some lining the floor of my shed that are years and years old, and they're as good as they were on day one, you know. Face down, by the way, because, I don't know, some comedian said that politics is show business for ugly people. Don't think all candidates accepted, of course.
Yes.
Now, you see, the fact that not doing it in Malin, you know, and it works, and you know that in France what they do is, any time an election is called, they put up special billboards in each town, mm-hmm. and these are the election billboards. And then each candidate, there's very strict rules about how much space each candidate is allowed to have on each billboard, and it works.
But Vincent, you know, I'm a bit peed off with that, because I thought that was my idea. I've had this notion for ages that in the entrance to a town, either nowadays a digital billboard where each would get time and it would scroll, but the French were already doing it. That's another fantastic money-making idea that I've had dashed from me. But there you go. The thing is though, I think there was someone, I'm not sure if it was a council level or Dáil level, Vincent, where they some candidate did propose like a ceasefire, so to speak, on them. But then the argument comes with that everyone knows maybe what Charlie McConlogue looks like or what Pierce Doherty looks like, but maybe not everyone knows what a new independent looks like or what have you. You know what I mean? And that the posters get the election buzz going, but level the playing field in terms of candidate recognition. So in other words, no posters would benefit the establishment or the established. Do you see any merit to that argument?
Well, actually, yeah. And I was talking to one of the candidates over the weekend. Am I allowed to say who for balance?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I was talking to Dr. Nuala Kerr of the Green Party. Uh-huh. And she, I think, has decided not to go with postering. I'm not sure, though. She'd have to tell you that herself. And her name, her face isn't well recognized. Yeah. But I mean, the posters aren't going to list off all the policies. The posters are showing you the face. Are we voting for people by how handsome they are or by what their policies are?
Mm.
Really? I mean, okay, I know maybe I'm being too naive about that. But, I mean, why don't we have, it's too late now, but next time out, why don't we have one constituency where there's no postering?
Yeah.
Just to see how that would go. Mm-hmm. Maybe it could be Donegal. I don't know, maybe it could be anywhere. But I see what you mean about face recognition. I mean, they do all get a mail shot, you know that? I mean, remember the European elections, you were bombarded with posts from every candidate, and if there's two voters in your house, you get two, and if there's four, like we have, you get four.
You can start wallpapering the shed now.
I know. I should actually. As regard, there's one guy who is making a collection, and he has a kind of an archive. A guy in Dublin, IrishElectionLiterature.com, I think he's called, and he's collecting them all. Every leaflet, every poster that's ever been.
Oh, I don't know.
So he's probably wallpapered his
house. I'm not
all
sure.
Right.
I tell you, there's some hobbies I think are a bit dodgy, and that's up there with them.
Well, anyway, though, I mean, I just think, and then you see, if one candidate, you know, announced that they were doing no postering, that would be putting it up to the others.
It is like in the council elections in Letterkenny, I believe Michael McBride is the only one that springs to mind that he hasn't put posters up for the last couple of years, the last couple of elections, and he's got elected. But it didn't necessarily change the tide. Micheál Colm doesn't either, does he not? It didn't necessarily change the tide. In other words, it became fashionable. Oh, well, Michael McBride or Micheál Colm can get elected. We're not going to use posters either. I think a blanket ban. How does it work in Malin, by the way? Is it the local tidy towns, Vincent, ask people not to poster?
I'm not involved, so I don't know. But
it must be something. There's lovely votes to get in Malin. There has to be something to it.
Well, but whatever they do, it works. There's no posters in Malin. Except I saw one at the weekend. Well, just the other side of the bridge. So I don't know if that was inside the zone or not.
I get you.
But
and finally, Vincent, what do you think of erecting a poster to say "No election posters, please"?
Yeah, the irony. All right, but I mean, it's however it started in Malin, it's working. So maybe other towns, especially ones who are trying to be tidy towns, should do that.
All right. Great stuff, Vincent. Lovely to chat to you. Thanks so much. Enjoy. And I presume you're using the posters. Is it for a comfortable walking or is it for insulation to keep the heat, to keep the cold out of the garage floor or what?
Insulation. It's just the wooden shed, you know, just to keep it from getting damp or whatever.
Brilliant.
You know, yeah.
There you go. All right. That's Vincent Traynor there. PJ's with me too. Hiya, PJ.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And the obvious, we talk about ironies. You know, I think all the world leaders have jetted in for the latest COP, COP meeting, and everything's about the environment. And yet we have these posters. That's the point I think you're going to make with us, is it?
Yeah. Well, we have the government on to us the whole time about reducing our carbon footprint. You know, and yet and all, when the election comes round, there's footprint. The footprint goes out the door. There's posters put up everywhere. They use vans to put the posters up. Cable ties are disregarded, and as your previous caller said, like they don't disintegrate, they're just they're there forevermore, amen. And there's no real call for posters at this present time, because we have social media, we have local radio like your own station, local papers and TV.
Mm.
And not alone that, as your previous caller also said, there'll be letters coming in from everybody that's standing to tell them what their policies
which
are.
Which is another, there has to be an element of environmental damage in all of those pamphlets coming through the doors as well, adding on
well,
to
the... Because I know here, they're generally just lifted and put in the bin, you know. I watch a bit of TV if I was interested in a debate or something. I'll watch the likes of the debate. But reading some of the stuff that we're going to make a stairway to heaven, I mean, all these false promises we get, like, it's very, very hard to read some of the stuff that's written on it to believe half it, you know.
But it also there are people that will feel like it's one rule for them and one rule for us. Like, we're in a county here whereby even the burning of turf is under threat. It's on its way out. There's no doubt about that because of the damage it does to the environment and what have you. Yet at the same time, I drove up a road today lined with bogs. Not an awful lot of turf cut during the year, I observed. And these non-biodegradable posters scattered everywhere. It's kind of like gaslighting. I don't like that word because it's overused, but you know what I mean? It does feel a little bit like, well, come on, lads, if the environment's that important, let's stop doing something that's damaging the environment. You take the lead and then maybe we'll follow.
Yeah, because the countryside is littered at the moment with posters. And I was down in the Midlands for the weekend and I drove back yesterday and all you have is posters all the way. And they are a distraction to drivers. Now, they wouldn't be a distraction for me because I don't look at any of those posters. The only thing I look for is road signs. And in saying that, some of the road signs can be blocked out with some of these big posters that are maybe 4x3s or 5x3s, you know, that you have a big picture of the party leader and then the party candidate that's running in the area, you know. And maybe the RSA should step in or have an input into this thing regarding posters. Like I know on Friday there was a scattering of posters up, and by law it shouldn't be up until the election was called, and the election wasn't even called at that stage until the afternoon.
I think I get you and your points well made. I think certainly posters were going up on Thursday and Thursday night, but apparently if the writ's going to be signed that day, you can stick them up on that day even if it hasn't yet been signed. But I take your point and it all still stands. PJ, listen, thank you very much indeed for your time. Morning, Greg, says Liz on Facebook. There's a poster in Castle Finn on the path towards the CPI that's very low down, which is very dangerous to everyone. Liz, if you're passing it or if someone else is passing that sign, will you take a picture of it, preferably standing beside it, and send it in to us, please? We can chase that up. Annagree Tidy Towns have been on to us. They say, Annagree Tidy Towns adopt a no-poster campaign as part of our environmental initiatives. We would ask all candidates, of the forthcoming election to discourage the use of posters in our village boundaries. Apparently, though, someone has already disregarded that because they also go on to say, please remove any posters already put up. If you put a poster up in the town boundaries of the Annagree Tidy Towns, they're not interested. They don't want it. Do candidates not ask homeowners permission to put posters on homeowners' fences / property? I believe they do. In the couple of examples I can think of, often the homeowner, you know, if it's in a good junction or something, often the homeowner is favourable to the candidate. Near the Glencar roundabout, there are two election posters on each side of the road that are about a foot off the ground from both footpaths. Shall we just hold back on naming the candidates at this point? Because I don't want this to sort of be weaponised to try and, just at this early stage, because it really is the early stages, to try and discourage people. All I'll say is to candidates and their teams, the eyes of the public are on these posters, and we're getting names of candidates and locations where the posters are not only under 7 or 8 feet, but actually almost at you know, ground height. So I'm just not going to mention candidates at this point, just in case people want to get out there and rectify the situation. Let me see. Okay. There's different comments coming in on different things. Lots of you actually texting in on your level of planning, for your funeral. And I appreciate that, because 8 out of 10 of us, you know, have no plans whatsoever. And 4 out of 10 of us have no intention of planning our funeral. So why wouldn't you? Why don't you? If you're a little like me, and I'm just trying to be honest, it's somebody else's problem. Maybe my mind will change. I don't know. But for others, maybe you've got it all planned out. I know people that with no illness whatsoever, they know exactly what they want at their funeral, from their obituary notice to their to the music that they want to be played, if that's permitted, to how they want, what coffin they want and all that kind of stuff. And it's, you know, often we talk about things like that and we think it's very morbid, but it's not really necessarily. It doesn't have to be, does it? Hello, Paula, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, yeah.
Right. Okay. I saw a video. I saw a video of the situation in Killygordon. Describe the scenes this morning.
Well, there's ongoing work going on this 3 weeks there with, I think it's water. But this morning, when you get to the lights to go down to the school, they're telling you the road's closed. Drive on. So. It's a couple of 100 yards to the school. There's traffic coming from Castle Finn. There's traffic coming from Convoy and from Balbuffet, and nobody's allowed to go down. Mm. But there's no other road signs before you even get to that point to tell you that there's a detour.
And it sends you up towards Liscooley, does it?
Yeah.
All right.
The school is Dromore.
And looking at the video I was sent, it looks like absolute chaos on the road, Paula.
It's an absolute joke, because everybody is stopping with their indicator on to go down and saying, look, we need to go down this road to get the children to school.
Mm-hmm.
And they're giving the fella abuse, because obviously he's just standing there doing his job. But, I mean, I had to drive 10K just to get my child to school, where I was at the point of a couple of 100 yards away.
Oh, my word. So you're a couple of 100 yards from the school. You can't get that down that road. You're sent off towards the schoolie, and it's 10 kilometres to get back round the other direction into the school.
You're sent off to Balbuffet, and then when you get to Balbuffet, you turn down at the lights to go the back road back to Killygordon.
And very dangerous old road too. Let me ask you, is this likely to be the same tomorrow? In other words, can a bit of management take place to at least defer this at pick-up drop-off time?
I don't even know, because as I said, there was nothing about it. There was no signs up the road to say, like, if I had knew that this morning, I could have went a couple of different routes that would have took me there.
Okay, but you were too far down. Yeah, I get you.
Yeah. Obviously, for the pickup this evening, nobody obviously knows either if it's going to be the same situation, or because everybody was stopping with the fella, and then that was causing the traffic to pile up.
Mm.
And we already waited about 10, 15 minutes to even be told that you're not allowed to go down.
Right, okay. Paula, listen, we're going to make inquiries to try and ascertain what the crack is for this evening at least, all right? So there can be some certainty in that regard, and to see what the plan is going forward. So leave it with us, and we will have that info. If you can't listen, give us a call back, and hopefully we'll have it resolved in terms of information before noon. Thanks for your time, Paula.
All right.
All right, take care. Paula, not just the only one. Many people contacting us in relation to that. Just before I do some comments to remind you, coming up after 10 o'clock, by the way, and we do this every Tuesday, you hear for the first time the latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána Síochána live here on the 9 till noon show. So you'll hear what's happening in your area, and how can you can assist the Gardaí in solving some of these crimes. A caller says, nothing wrong with posters, it brightens the place up. Okay. Oh, yes, sorry, by the way, before we get to more comments. After 11, we're having our first GE24, our first Donegal-specific podcast. It's going to be live on the show and podcast later, where we will be running through the candidates, who's likely to be in, who's likely to miss out, who could lose a seat, who'd retain the seat. I really want to try and pin our guests down to see who they think actually will be representing Donegal after the election. But I'm also inviting you, and many of you have already, to give us your five candidates. Who do you believe will be elected in Donegal? And I know people can have biases in what they want, and that's fine. You can put your want list down as well. But I really would love to get your insight there, the hive mind, as to who you think will be representing Donegal after the election. Please could you ask politicians not to erect posters in tidy towns and villages, says a listener. They are a blight on the environment and the financial cost is astronomical. It suit them better to donate that money to people in need. Another listener points to that. There are so many great charities that could do with the money wasted on election posters. But you see, then the argument is it a waste? It might feel like a waste, but it is a waste. Or is it a waste? These politicians, or those politicians who were elected last time and are plastering the place now with the posters, didn't do enough for the people and are now panicking about their seats. I'm referring to one politician in the local election. He didn't have to put up one poster because he worked for the people when elected and was returned. Interesting. We'll not ask you who that is. What a disgrace that the Taoiseach did not show up to meet the public in Letterkenny last night. He was delayed for hours and used the excuse of a phone call. The phone call took 40 minutes. People were outstanding waiting to meet with the Taoiseach and he never showed up. What a disgrace. Just because there were peaceful protesters and he didn't want to be caught up with them. He headed to Ballybuffet to avoid them even though they did nothing wrong. His team, very clear that the reason they didn't, that they were delayed. But obviously people will have their own opinions.